This is News in No Time. Ed Gordon on today's roundtable. A program offers rewards to the poor for doing the right thing. And a raid on Congressman Jefferson's office is ruled okay. Joining us today to discuss these topics and more from our NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C., Mary Frances Berry, professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania. From our bureau in New York City, Bob Meadows. He's a writer with People magazine. And Roland Martin, executive editor of the Chicago Defender, joins us from member station WBEZ in Chicago. All right, folks, let's look to what we have been talking about for a number of months since the raid in May and the search of Congressman Jefferson's office. And this is U.S. District Judge Thomas Hogan, who put down a ruling suggesting that, in his words, members of Congress are not above the law. He has rejected the requests from lawmakers as well as Representative Jefferson to return materials seized by the FBI during that raid. The suggestion, and these are the judge's words, Congress's capacity to function effectively is not threatened by permitting congressional offices to be searched pursuant to validly issued search warrants. All right, Roland Martin, here we have it. This judge, and interestingly enough, this is the judge who approved the FBI's request to, in fact, conduct the overnight search of Congressman Jefferson's office. What say you?
Well, I certainly agree with Judge Hogan in every respect. I've always contended that a member of Congress does not have the right to simply do as they wish. I certainly understand the separation of church and powers, but clearly they had a well-laid-out subpoena, a search warrant that they wanted executed. And so, again, you're talking about possible crimes here. And so I don't care whether, and I'm not going to play the race card. I don't care if he's black. I don't care if he's white, female, Hispanic, Asian. Does not matter. He is not above the law.
Mary?
Well, I think, Roland, that's all fine and dandy. But and the people I talk to in New Orleans are only concerned about the apparent corruption that Jefferson apparently has been engaged in, whatever the legal issues are. But there's something a little suspicious about this. I mean, when the Hogan approves the idea of Jefferson's private lawyer, House counsel, and the Capitol Police were not able to observe what they were taking from his office, and there may have been materials there having to do with his functions as a congressman and his constituents, there was nothing wrong with letting them observe it. I can imagine if Congress went and got a subpoena from some judge, and you can always find a judge to issue a subpoena, to go in, to the White House and to pick up materials in connection with some criminal, supposed criminal matter, say the Abramoff matter, and to not let the White House counsel or anybody at the White House to tell the guards, the Secret Service, that they're going to break in if they don't let them. This would be ridiculous. So I think the way in which they did it raises some concerns, and I'm not surprised that since Hogan issued the search warrant, obviously he would uphold his search warrant. We'll have to see what the Supreme Court says about it, but I think that there should have been a better way to go about it and not to raise all of these questions.
Bob Meadows, here's what's very interesting in all of this. This angered members of Congress so much that some quietly suggested and some a bit loudly that they were going to retaliate by perhaps tinkering with FBI and Justice Department budgets. The president stepped in and said, hey, let's cool this thing off, find out what happens. Can you work out a compromise? Otherwise, we're going to see what the ruling will be from Judge Hogan, and suggested that the Justice Department would not seek to regain custody of the materials until this was ruled upon. So clearly, this has raised the ire of many, not just Congressman Jefferson on the Hill.
And thus far, no compromise has still been worked out. This was actually something that actually brought Republicans and Democrats together when this came out. They said it was a breach of constitutional boundaries, that Bush has again overstepped his authority, the broad executive authority that he adheres to. People, like you say, are outraged about this, and it remains to be seen what this is going to mean for New Orleans, of course, because Jefferson has been bumped off. The Democrats went against him. They bumped him off, forced him off the Ways and Means Committee. He's up for re-election. One of the things that he's been touting is how much aid he's been able to bring to New Orleans post-Katrina. So it remains to be seen, what is he going to be able to do now?
You know, Ed, first of all, the judge really agreed with the point that Mary made in that he said that the way it was executed was not properly administered. And so certainly that is an issue. But I think, again, the ruling was very specific as to whether or not it was proper to execute such a warrant on a member of Congress's office. So, again, how it was administered and whether or not it was permissible, I think, are two separate things.
We'll have to see what happens on appeal.
Right.
Ultimately, these records will be looked at by the FBI. They will either be looked at with some judge overseeing it, like they did in Watergate, where the judge oversaw the looking at the tapes, listening to them, and so on. Or it will be seen just by the FBI under an order. That will ultimately happen. One could argue, though, that members of Congress, in a bipartisan way, were concerned, not just because of the legal issue, but because there have been many issues raised about some of the other members of Congress.
Well, that's it, Mary.
And they might be worried about somebody coming to their office.
That's the crux of the argument, and there are those who are upset about this in this way. They believe that the whole question of the separation of the branches was brought out, not because they felt that Congress was trying to uphold that stalwart thinking, but it is the ability to protect themselves, those who might not be doing the right thing, for fear that they might be the next raided.
And there have been many examples in the Congress of people, from DeLay to Cunningham, that guy out in California. There have been many examples of this wrongdoing by people in Congress. So there may be, and the Abramoff thing isn't settled yet, and it has, there are many byways involved in that. So I don't think that when people start raising constitutional issues, it's like quoting the Bible. They don't always do it for the purest of reasons.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's turn our attention, as that story continues, and we'll continue to watch it as we have, to take a look at something out of Chicago. And here's the interesting point. You know the points you earn for perhaps using your credit card or using your frequent flyer miles that earn you either trips or little trinkets that you can go to catalogs and receive. Well, in Chicago, residents in low-income neighborhoods are earning rewards points for paying their rent, getting their children to school every day, and seeking work. And the points can be applied even if they attend PTA meetings, and can be applied for gifts like DVD players and the like. This is from the Pathway to Rewards program, which is run by a nonprofit organization called Project Match. They have awarded about $19,000 in prizes to 130 people since the inception a year and a half ago. Roland Martin, should in fact people be getting rewards for what many would be, what many would consider to be doing the right thing?
Well, sure. I mean, look, I don't have any problem with it because, again, if you also step outside of individuals receiving welfare, you have other cases like that. I mean, I don't see the particular issue. The question is, you know, we can always find something to complain about. We can always say your welfare or you're in public housing, you know, you shouldn't, if they're giving you free bus passes, you shouldn't be getting that. You can at least pay for something. We can always come up with something. Hey, look, if they are going to PTA meetings and got kids in school, that's great. You know, what the heck? The quicker they can get off of welfare, that's great, and it can build their momentum. So, you know, look, I have no problem with it whatsoever.
But the assumption there, Bob, is that this will move them off of welfare and suggest a new way of thinking for many of these folks. Others will argue that this is simply the idea that many people hold, misguided, albeit, that you have to give incentives for these folks to do the right thing.
You know, that they may have that. Well, what you first said, yes, that is the hope, that these people, that the people in these positions will develop a new mindset so that they're doing right, the right thing. They're trying hard. They're striving all the time. But I have to piggyback on what Roland said. My first reaction to this was sort of a negative thing. And then I remembered, you know, when I was a kid, my father used to offer money for A's and B's. That didn't necessarily make me do well, but it was definitely a nice incentive. This is private money that's being given out here. It's not coming from the government. It's not public. These are people who want to do this. The project, these are people who want to do this. This is not coming out of any taxpayers' pockets or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all for it.
So, Mary, I'm going to show my age. This is no different than, I think it was called S&H green stamps. I remember people used to collect those and you'd go get an iron or whatever. I am an old man.
I thought you were Ed.
I don't know what you thought.
Is this to some degree the same thing?
Here's what I think about it. First, when I heard about it, I thought, what is it? Dogs doing tricks and, you know, you give them a treat. And then I thought, well, there's nothing wrong with that. It is like, you know, all these things that we've been discussing, the different kinds of rewards. So I see nothing wrong with it if, in fact, there is some kind of support network to make it possible for people to do the things they need to do. And if someone, I don't know who it is, in this program is taking into account whatever problems these people are. These are people who are in hardcore poverty, who are the ones who are left after a whole lot of people have already gotten off welfare and into work and so on. And these are people who have a lot of different needs. So if there's some framework for this to make it possible for everybody to do whatever it is, whether it's to get a high school equivalency or whether it's to get a job, that there is a job, there's something, then I'm all for it. But if it's simply making promises, getting some people to do something and leaving the others behind, then I'm not. But overall, I'm for it.
All right. Well, here's the bigger and larger and longer argument in some people's minds of getting something for nothing. Others will say that this certainly is something for atrocities, and that is the growing question of reparations for African Americans, descendants of slaves. Of late, we've seen this movement change from a fringe movement to scholars and historians picking up the mantle and running this race. One of the major proponents of it, Charles Ogletree, a friend to this program and Harvard Law professor, one of the leading legal minds in this country. What we have seen of late are small victories across the country, including the Moravian Church and Episcopal Church, both apologizing for owning slaves and promising to battle current racism. The Episcopalians even went as far as to launch a national year-long probe into the church's links to slavery and to decide whether the church should compensate black members. Roland Martin, I remember, again, years ago when people talked about reparations, there was this thought of a larger umbrella, if you will, that every black descendant of slaves would receive money, probably and preferably in some people's minds, from the government. Here we see these small victories. Is this isolated, or do you believe this is a way to show the growing thought and movement of reparations to black Americans?
Well, I think the great thing is the people who are advocating for reparations are getting smarter as to how they approach this. The problem with the whole reparations debate is we went from looking at the history of racism and jumped all the way to, well, how much am I getting, without actually dealing with a process. And so, again, when you begin to advocate on behalf of those African Americans in Tulsa, when you begin to go look at these very individual cases, that's how you build momentum. You simply don't just have a conversation going from, you know, A to Z and everything is fine. And so when you begin to force people to confront the reality of American corporations that have grown and benefited as a result of slavery, when you begin to advocate it that way, it's a whole different picture. Everybody always wants to focus on, well, how much money? Well, I'm not giving, those Negroes don't deserve any kind of money whatsoever. But when you begin to force them to say, wait a minute, this particular church, this corporation, this institution was built on the backs of slaves, then it changes the view of people, because you can really quantify something. So, again, that was a very smart move to do it that way versus that whole emotional issue, because, sorry, you were not going to win that debate.
I wanted to make two points about this, Ed. One is that I was pleased that the book I wrote about Callie House and the 1890s reparations movement was very important, and these people have been who are in the movement have been reading about it, because they didn't know that blacks, at least those blacks who were alive and in being, had asked for pensions and reparations, and that this brings into being a new legal approach. I mean, because they asked for it while they were alive. But the other point I want to make is a woman named Deirdre Farmer Paulman is one of the leading lawyers who has brought most of these private corporation cases that are talked about in the article, and she was the one who first decided to go after the private the corporations rather than just focusing on the government. And I think what Ogletree and the NCOBRA and the people who are in Adjua and the other people involved there have done with looking at Tulsa and looking at getting legislation is important. But I think the most significant thing that has happened is that when white folk like Mrs. Brown and the Brown family that's been in the story that was in the news, and white people in the churches and elsewhere have decided, look, I don't care what the debate is among black people about whether we want reparations or don't want reparations. As far as we are culpable and as far as we have connections, we want to assert that something ought to be done. So I think the movement is gaining momentum, and the piece that's missing is any responsibility for reconciliation and reparations mm-hmm. for our government, which John Conyers has been pushing forever, and that's going to take, I think, some time.
And Mrs. Brown, we should note, is a member of the Episcopal Church who screened a documentary focusing on white culpability in all
right.
of this. All right, Bob Meadows, we should very quickly get your thought on this and whether or not you see this as a uptick in the idea of more people joining the fight for reparations.
More people joining the fight. You know, I'm not really certain that there will be more people necessarily joining it. I mean, people may jump on a bandwagon if it gets really rolling. But I think, as Mary said, you have some really good people on it, like Deidre, who are really working on this. And of course, as Roland said, going about it with a new tactic by going after private corporations and really going after them is like a puzzle, because a lot of the organizations,
yes.
companies that did that 150 years ago have been bought, sold, merged into different things, and they may even no longer exist. So it's really, really an intensive research project too.
Well, Bob, one thing I can promise you, you say you may see some people if this thing really gets rolling. You will see some people jump on board if this thing really gets rolling. I can promise you that much. I don't know much, but I know that. All right, folks, thank you so much. Greatly appreciate it.